Three, two, one.
Welcome, everyone, to episode 162 of the No Normal Show, brought to you by Revive. This is where we leave all things status quo, traditional, old school, and boring in the dust and celebrate the new, the powerful, the innovative, the future, all related to how brands can lead the way in health. This week, we're doing something a little different, which is why you hear my voice in the intro. I'm a co-host of the No Normal Show. I'm Stephanie Weirwill, SVP of Integrated Marketing at Revive. And this week we are revisiting an episode from late last year, an episode where we focused on the health brands to watch in 2022. And we said at that point that we would revisit it, that we would share with you all months down the road what's been going on with those brands, what movement they've made, whether they were the right selection of the brands to really take a look at. So that's what we're doing today. We are more than 6 months in to 2022. We are well on our way to 2023, well on our way to looking at what next year is going to bring. So it feels like a great time to do a quick look back and say, were we right? What's going on with those brands today? So those three brands are Hims & Hers, City Block, and of course, our favorite giant, Apple. Now, I'm going to give you a quick rundown of what's going on with those three brands and what's been happening in the last 6-7 months with them. And then we will take a blast from the past, go back to the future, time travel, and share some of those predictions that we had from late 21. That will also be a good time to get up to speed on these three brands if some of them are new to you. City Block is very much an up-and-coming organization. Hims & Hers is pretty solidified, at least in the retail space, but definitely up-and-coming in the primary space. And then, of course, Apple, a longstanding behemoth and giant. So let me give a few quick headlines of what those brands have been up to before we blast back and talk about who they are and what they do. I'll start with City Block. It's, as I mentioned, the one of these three that's the most up and coming. So City Block is an organization that is very focused on serving those that are not always served in health, those who are lower income, the Medicaid population. And they specifically said when they were formed that they want to focus on low income patients because the worried well are the ones that get the most attention usually. The more better off customers are the ones that are usually targeted with all kinds of ways to optimize health. So we've seen not as much movement here maybe as we expected, but it's a big complex challenge, right? It's a big problem to solve. And there has been a ton of conversation over the past 6-7 months about health equity overall. And in fact, we just covered health equity in our last 3 or 4 episodes where we talked a lot about disparity dystopia, which is what we call one of the predictions from Joe Public 2030, which focuses all around the disparities, the health disparities that we see. So a few quick updates from what City Block has done. They now have over 70,000 members located in multiple states, New York, Connecticut, Massachusetts, DC, expanded into North Carolina, Ohio. The goal is to serve 10 million people in 10 years. So always love a BHAG, always love a big, hairy, audacious goal. And that certainly is one. And since the most recent round of funding, they've cited a 15% reduction in emergency room visits and also have cited 20% reduction in inpatient hospital stays among its members. So I think that's pretty cool that what they're doing is trying to tie back to explicit health outcomes in addition to members and revenue. So keep that one pretty high level. As you hear the episode that we did late last year, you'll hear Chase talk all about City Block and kind of who they are and what they're up to and why we think they're important. The second brand that we identified as one to watch was Hims & Hers. And this is a fun one, a very consumer brand, very CPG, consumer products, consumer packaged goods, one that you see in your local Target, Bed Bath & Beyond. And since then, since we recorded that episode, they've added Walmart to their retail outlet partners. So what you might see on those shelves are all kinds of vitamins, supplements. They also have prescription medications that you can, through virtual care, sign on, ask for help, ask for care, and get prescriptions sent directly to you instead of having to go to a doctor in the traditional way. And they also have primary care and mental health, behavioral health services, which are all virtual as well. So we put them in the category of the One Medicals of the world, the Parsley Healths, the Forwards. Hims and Hers is absolutely trying to push forward in the primary care space. So what's the update here? Well, they've been really busy over the last 6-7 months. They partnered with Carbon Health to expand in-person primary care and give Californians in-person medical appointments. Prior to that, they were really focused on virtual, but now we're starting to see them expand in the in-person space, which, side note, we see the big primary care providers doing that as well. And by big, I mean One Medical, Forward, those, and sort of big new entrants, if you will. They also saw a big revenue increase from Q4 2021. Hims and Hers grew subscriptions of their overall members by 95%. Now they reach over 600,000 members. And they saw their revenue increase over the last quarter too. So there's some good growth here. Keep listening to hear more about Hims and Hers, who they are, what they do, and why we think they're important. And now, of course, the big one, right? Apple. We touched on this last episode. Apple's new 60 pager, as it's being lovingly called, the large report that they launched that highlights why Apple will be slash is the center of health, not health tech, health. So we touched on that report last time, but let's just go a little bit deeper because this report sums up all that Apple's been up to in the last 6-7 months. And the big headline is that, again, Apple sees itself as a center of health, but one of the ways is by grabbing all health data and putting it in one place. So Apple cites its health app, which spans multiple devices, right? This is not a watch thing. This is not an iPhone thing. This is so much bigger than the watch. And I think even as we on this show have talked about Apple, we've kind of focused on it as being, oh yeah, the Apple Watch does a lot. It monitors a lot. That's true. But this report really highlights that that's just the tip of the spear. They mentioned the health app and how it can pull all types of health data into one place, which gets us thinking, gets me thinking, is Apple's health app, is Apple Health the new EHR? Is it the new MyChart? It certainly is interoperable in the sense that Apple also goes into this report into detail about how on the medical side, they're sending health data to doctors, sending health data to hospitals. Their vision is that doctors and medical practitioners would be able to combine the data that they have in their EHRs with your Apple data, right? Your personal data around movement, activity, sleep, falls, mobility, hearing, women's health, cycles, menstruation, I mean, you name it, right? All of that data being pulled into one place so that physicians now don't just have your blood test from 6 months ago. They don't just have your cholesterol levels and your triglyceride levels, but they also have your daily health and lifestyle data. So that's the vision, which again, gets me thinking, you know, several years ago, there was rumors that Apple would buy Epic. That clearly didn't happen. Are they building their own MyChart? Is that the long-term goal? Is that the idea? Because they pull MyChart data into Apple Health so that people can monitor that on a daily basis, right? I can pull up my Apple Health and I can see what my blood work was, but I can also see all those data together. So ultimately, this is the Copernican consumer come to life. And if you're a loyal listener, you know the Copernican consumer is one of the many predictions that we have in the Joe Public 2030 book, which is all about bringing health data into one central location so that people can not just monitor their data, but manage it and actually get prescriptive guidance about what to do, which is what Apple's moving towards. So very, very exciting. The other thing that Apple mentioned in this 60-page report, which we didn't go too far into depth last week on, but is the medical research. So it was new news to me But there is a research app that Apple calls. You can download it. You can download it in the App Store. It's called Research. And then you can participate in a variety of research studies. For example, some of the open studies at the moment include Apple's Women's Health Study, which is in partnership with Harvard Teach-In School of Public Health and the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences, as well as, of course, Apple. So this allows people to participate in a decades-long study. Again, the study lasts for more than a decade, or decades, plural, so really long-lasting. And it's focused on advancing the understanding of menstrual cycles and their relationship to health conditions like infertility and menopause. So if you're like me, your Apple Health app is already keeping track of your cycles, keeping track of all kinds of symptoms that you may have over time, because that's really useful on an ongoing basis. And then it can start to map that relationship to anything that pops up down the road. Another example is the Apple Heart and Movement Study, which is in partnership with American Heart Association and Brigham and Women's Hospital. And it helps to advance the understanding of heart health and activity. So what it's doing is monitoring ongoing activity, cardio, walking, running, biking, all those things that we're always tracking from a movement standpoint, because we got to get our steps in and we got to get our activity minutes up and we got to close our rings. And then it's starting to map them back to heart issues that come up later in life. So this one lasts for at least 5 years. And then the third one that's really, I think, especially interesting is the Apple Hearing Study in partnership with the University of Michigan and the World Health Organization. So by nature, Apple is constantly monitoring your surroundings. If you're wearing Apple headphones, it knows, you know, AirPods Pros or just AirPods, it knows how loud your audio is. If you're just going about your daily activities, it can start to tell you if, you know, you're operating heavy machinery and you're going above 80, 90, 100 decibels, or you're in a rock concert, right? Or whatever it is. So it's capturing sound exposure over time, specifically around headphone and environmental sounds, and then ultimately helping to develop new products to optimize the hearing experience. So it sounds like this one is really even gives Apple data to optimize their products as well. This one lasts for at least 2 years. So I bring up the longevity of it because what's really interesting about these studies is it makes research studies accessible to all, and it starts capturing data from people who maybe otherwise wouldn't participate in a research study. This is all volunteer, but the user doesn't have to do much. The user doesn't have to log anything. You have to just live your life and then answer a few questions here and there and continue to opt in if you want to keep participating year after year after year. So pretty cool stuff here and pretty cool data being shared back to the medical community. So those are just the high level notes. Again, Apple's been the busiest of all three of these brands to watch, but the three of them we still think are good. So with that said, let's travel back, time travel, back to 6 months ago and hear a little bit about the foundation of these three brands and what they've been up to over time now that you have these updates in your brain. So time travel. 3, 2, 1. Here we go.
In our space, in the health space, what are the brands that we are most excited to watch to see what they're going to do? So we each pulled together our own fave, and we're gonna explain which brand each of us feels compelled to really pay attention to and why. And then I think as the year goes on, 2022, we'll revisit these brands to see how they're doing, right? Because I think in each case, they represent some really cool stuff, some potential innovation, that kind of thing. So that's what we're gonna do. We are gonna start with Chase. Chase, you have a favorite health brand. City Block Health. What's the story? What do they do? Give us the scoop.
Yes. I think one of the biggest issues that I guess that was highlighted by the pandemic, COVID, was the inequity in access to care. And I think one that has always been an issue. This was just a major spotlight on that. And I think there was even a recent report by the Commonwealth, which bluntly states in nearly every state, healthcare is better for white people. And so I think this is a a huge initiative that needs to be addressed by multiple organizations, not just CityBlock, and other people are doing it too, but this is their fundamental purpose. That is what they are trying to do. And I think that's really important. And so I think while we see maybe a growing trend of organizations trying to tap into the primary care organization, whether it's going after maybe healthy or relatively well-off patients, CityBlock is different. And so they go after, they serve low-income and Medicaid populations. One of the things I think that makes them the unique is they are not just trying to put up a health building in communities that need it, but they are actually going into the communities, meeting patients where they're at. So whether it's bringing clinics to schools or bringing clinics to churches or even within the community centers that are already there that are serving those communities, that's how they're bringing care to people that live in that city or town. The other thing I think that is really interesting is they hire a lot of their medical care team from that community. So not only is it people that understand maybe people's hesitancy to accessing care or people's reservations to show they have, you know, a healthcare issue, they understand the culture, they understand how to communicate with these people, they know them. And so I think that is a really effective way of getting people to access care. And it's nothing new, right? Like, it's not a complex idea. It's just that this is their sole purpose as an organization. This is what they're doing. And their goal by 2030 is to reach 70 million lives. So they're only in a certain select markets, but they're growing rapidly. I think in September, they had their Series D funding for $400 million. So up to this point, they've raised $900 million in funding. So they are getting a lot of attention from investors, for sure. So I think to me, they're not necessarily doing anything complex obviously they've found a way to get people to access care, medical care, but also mental health care through in-home care, like I said, community center care, but they have a virtual care component too. So they have a really nice health technology platform that they utilize as well. But I just appreciate what they're doing. I think it's an organization worth highlighting. I think we need to see other organizations make this their priority, or not just priority, but their sole focus in order to truly make a dent in making sure access to care is available in low income and Medicaid populations.
Oh, that's great. That's great. I mean, obviously, the book that we have coming up has a whole prediction related to this. It's unfortunately labeled Disparity Dystopia, which will give you some foreshadowing of where we think it's going. Well, something you said, though, as you described this is going to sound super corny, guys. I'm sorry, but I don't know that I've ever heard it before. You said it was their sole purpose. Hmm. And the way you were describing it, I heard soul as S-O-U-L. Because it sounded like somebody that was like really, you know, like in your soul, good for your soul, real meaningful purpose for an organization, right? Mm. Not shareholder value and all the other things. Of course, most nonprofits aren't the latter, but they're not all the former either. They're not all soul, S-O-U-L. So for some reason that stood out to me. I'm like, that has to have been used before by somebody somewhere. I just don't ever remember seeing that play in words, but yeah, that's a really cool model.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm excited just to see. I mean, obviously they've got a lot of investment, so they're growing like crazy. But not just that, but I think they're showing the results of it too, that it's actually working within these communities. And I just, like I said, it's a simple idea, and we all know that it can work. It's just, they're doing it. And I think they're doing it in an authentic way for these communities. And that's what's really making it work too.
Yeah. Well, that's great. That's perfect for the holidays too. Nice. All right, Stephanie, what's your brand to watch?
Okay. Mine is Hims and Hers. So They are a combination of prescription medicine, primary care, supplements, CPG products, kind of all in one. You may have seen them at your local Target, Bed Bath & Beyond, Walgreens with their CPG products. So that includes supplements, vitamins, shampoo, beauty products. But what's really interesting is they have another business model where they offer primary care, and that's kind of telehealth version of primary care. But the really interesting piece is they're a place you can go to get certain prescription medicines without having to get your doctor's prescription. So basically through telemedicine, there's licensed physicians that you go to, have a chat with them, and then they can both prescribe and deliver prescription medicines, but it's only for specific areas. So the whole idea is it's based around this insight that there's certain conditions and concerns that people don't bring to their physicians: sexual health, hair loss, mental health, and a lot of times just having the preconceived notion or shame of finding it hard to open up about these kinds of health issues. So the idea is to have an online platform to take the pressure off and give people a safe space. So their products include sexual health, including treatment for STDs, STIs, ED treatment, skincare, hair loss, anxiety, depression, and vitamins and supplements. So that's really their sweet spot. But what I think is interesting about them is this combo of healthcare plus beauty that I just haven't seen done in this way, very modern way, plus this addressing these kinds of concerns. So they're, of course, one of the many new entrants that offers primary care services. You think about One Medical and Forward and others. And to give some sense of context, their valuation at IPO, Hims and Hers, was about $1.6 billion, which is actually somewhat on par with what we've seen from One Medical. But they've got a pretty significant revenue increase over time. And yes, they are very niche, but I think it's just a really interesting model to enter into this combo of prescription, beauty, healthcare, primary care. And I will say Lemonade has a similar model, so they're not the only one. There are others out there with similar models, but Hims and Hers is different because their CPG is actually on retail stores, which gives a bit of a brand halo.
Well, I love first of all, I love the brand identities, right? Lemonade and Hims and Hers. It's not like online health store, yes. Health for you. Health plus beauty, like it's different, and that's not as important as the other things. The other thing is super, when you first talked about this, Stephanie, I don't know why I was so thrown by the idea that you just call these folks up and get a prescription. I mean, Teladoc is that. Teladoc has the same deal, right? I mean, you're still talking to a doctor. What's interesting about it though is, and I can't think of any examples off the top of my head, but over the past decade, a lot of people have tried to, I don't know if disrupt is the right word, but disrupt the pharmacy space. And what they always ran into was, this is not like any other business where you just, you know, like have a supplier, you get the supply, you put it on online or you sell it, right? It is extraordinarily complicated. It is all owned by PBMs. They run the whole thing. There's these middlemen, these kind of like the dark internet of the pharmacy middlemen, giant companies that really control that business. And so it's interesting to figure out, like, how did they, you know, we don't have to get into it unless you know, how did they figure that out? How did they get to a point where they're essentially offering, you know, an alternative retail place for pharmacy, for drugs? This is interesting.
Yeah, I don't know that answer, but what I do find interesting is at least the way, you know, it's their branding suggests these prescriptions are actually branded. So they've got the label on them, Hers or Hims, very beautiful design, very beautiful product design, which matches to the design of their supplement, which of course is an easier business to get into. But the point is it feels the whole thing is set up to feel less scary and feel less, even just getting your prescription and having it a beautiful bottle. It's just a much more interesting and better experience than, you know, your typical, like, I'm sick kind of package.
Yeah.
It's very approachable.
Yeah. Very approachable, which is really cool. And I wonder to what degree that kind of white label approach to drugs, you know, we always hear about generics versus brands, and people are willing to pay four times as much for Tylenol than the generic sitting right next to it. I wonder to what degree that impacts prescription drugs like Viagra. If you are needing Viagra and you want Viagra, do you feel like the Hims and Hers version of Viagra is going to be as strong? I just picked that out because it's a huge brand, but I mean, like, I don't know how that impacts the prescription side of things.
Yeah, I don't either. What I do know is because they have a smaller amount of drugs they offer, I would imagine that's what's allowed them to get into this business. So they only offer like 10 mental health options, but they are, you know, your more common drugs like Wellbutrin, for example, Prozac, Paxil. And same with sexual health and skin. So they have a typical handful of here's, you know, what the most popular ones are, and it's not a full service suite.
Yeah. But it's still like an 80-20 rule, right? It's probably 80% of the drugs most people are, yeah, you know, 80% of the drugs people need, they're mostly generic. I would assume all generic maybe, or at its generic stage. So you can white label them. Yeah, that's super interesting. And I just love the branding for that too. When we went and looked at it earlier, I think that's really cool. I'm going to go in a bit of a different way, right? So you guys are kind of picking emerging brands that are trying to do some things different or new. I'm going to pick Apple. And I pick Apple because I really don't think most people think of them as a health brand. We have talked in this show about how Tim Cook said in 2019 in an interview that he believes that when all is said and done, Apple's legacy will be, more than anything else, its impact on the field of health, which I just find super fascinating, that the organization of this kind and this size and this, you know, brand prestige is focused on that space. They've obviously been doing a lot of things already. We've talked a little bit on the show about their EMR integration and how they've allowed health systems to kind of leverage the iOS platform to bring their EMRs through. Whether that's a good thing or not for health systems is debatable, but it's great for Apple and it shows a way that they can add value. We have cited before on this show, though I will reference it again, the way in which just their everyday products like Apple Watch and their phone have really helped even advance clinical care. So the example that we use in the book is that using data from basically the watch and the phone, they've been able to identify something called walking steadiness. So they were trying to figure out how to use the data to detect falls in people, right? So that's where they started. If somebody falls, that's, especially if you're a senior, that's a big deal. Is that something where that the phone can automatically alert somebody? Can it alert the person? Can it set off alarm? Whatever. And in doing that, they came to see and understand the data that preceded falls. And that led them to this idea of walking steadiness, which you can see is something that you can find in the health app that allows you to you know, monitor this precursor to a fall and maybe even prevent a fall or take steps to prevent it, to the degree that it's now kind of it's a clinical metric that didn't exist before. That came from Apple, didn't come from, you know, a prestigious AMC or something like that. So they are into that, and because of the data, the level of data they have and the intimacy of that data being that it's on our bodies with us every day, such opportunity to make more breakthroughs like that. They are cited as being maybe one of the most impactful innovators when it comes to health and healthcare in terms of that type of thing in the coming decade. So there's all of this, and they have stated that they have, you know, huge goals. They want to move into healthcare. They want to launch Apple Clinics. They announced something a number of years ago where they enabled physicians to monitor that very data that I'm talking about directly from their patients so they can have that conversation. So there's all this stuff. Now, obviously, like we've talked about on the show, and we will continue to talk about because it's a big part of the book, these giant brands that are getting into health, you know, they're finding it not easy. It's not a surprise. there's been some stumbles. They've been slow on the Apple clinics. They've really struggled with that. In fact, there was an article I found from October, just a couple months ago, about how their Apple Health division is in turmoil. So the thing I mentioned before, which they call a health habit, the idea of connecting data from a patient to doctors, they're closing that. They're not going to continue that. There's been a lot of other struggles, but the struggles are really, they're of a nature that has to do with the leadership and the personnel in the division. So in other words, they had some mercurial leaders that didn't know how to manage people well. There's just, it's kind of like bad corporate behavior. I mean, not legal or anything like that, but just it's led them to a lot of stumbles, right? And so you could look at that and go, well, again, you're not going to figure this out. They've figured out how hard it is to launch a clinic for real. They have Apple clinics for their employees, but not for real. But here's the deal. This is what I'll leave you with. Scott Galloway, one of my favorite people that I mention all the time, his email this week was all about Apple. One of his emails that he put out was all about Apple. And I think this just says it all. You combine what I'm going to tell you with what Tim Cook said about their legacy. So Apple was the first company in the history of the earth to reach $1 trillion in terms of their value. $1 trillion. It took them 42 years of being in business. And they were the first one to get to beat Amazon, to beat Walmart. First one, right? Took them 2 years after that to get to $2 trillion. Jeez. Just like insane. I mean, I've read Scott Galloway's book, The Four, which is about Apple, Amazon, Google. Who am I missing?
Facebook,
thank you. From 2017, where he talks about who's going to be first to $1 trillion. Well, it was Apple. And it took him 2 years to get to $2 trillion. They're at 2.7 now. So they're going to get to three probably within the next year or two.
Wow.
This is a brand that is among the top five most prestigious, successful brands in this country. Maybe ever, right? But in this country, in terms of everything that a brand is supposed to do for you and what it stands for as a company, they have a ton of cash. Like just a ton of cash. Like, I mean, cash, like money just sitting in a bank to invest in things. And they can't just keep it there because, as we know, all of us who have savings accounts, they're earning like 0.2% if it's sitting in the savings account, which it's not, but they got to invest it. This is a company that's known for design, known for innovation, like all of this. If they want a piece of healthcare and I'm a legacy system, I would be watching that like a hawk. They are not going to go away. I'd be shocked if they went away. They just need to kind of get their house in order in terms of how they're going about it. But like others, Walmart and others, Amazon, who've had stumbles, they're not going away. They're just learning. So I want to see what happens with Apple. Do they continue to have bumps? Do they continue to decline? Or are we going to see more stuff from them in the coming year?
Yeah, I firmly believe that whoever owns and controls the data owns the future. So if Apple is now the biggest controller slash owner of our day-to-day health data, then that says a lot. Now, hospitals and health systems absolutely have a massive amount of health data from EMRs, but I would argue that's a moment in time in most people's lives. It's a moment in time. It's once a year. It's when you came in for your, you know, surgery, those kinds of things. It's not every single day on your wrist, which has a long way to go. I mean, right now it's just EKG and heart rate and
listen to you those though, kind like, of things. It's just EKG.
Well, like, right, but it's 5 years ago, whole list.
Yeah, no, you're right. I'm just saying, like, even 3 years ago, those would have been like, can you believe it's got EKG on it? And now our standards are, I mean, you know, it's got EKG and blood pressure and blah, blah.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the blood sugar monitor, which is supposedly a rumor of being developed and other things. But anyway, the point is, what I think is really interesting is because of that day-to-day health data that I'm seeing organizations like Future, which is a remote personal trainer type of company, they actually send you an Apple Watch with your subscription so that they can monitor your progress. And same with, you know, various primary care models, like plugging in your data from Apple so that they can monitor your progress, which of course doctors do as well. But that's a huge shift from the traditional EMR model.
I was about to ask, is there any honorable mentions that should make the cut?
But for brands?
Forward. Yeah.
You said Forward. That was the last one. I don't know. I'm sure there are. Yeah. I mean, there's in my market, Bright Health, which just got another funding infusion. Just another way to come at health insurance.
Yeah.
That's I think their motto is something like health insurance you don't hate, which I love that. There's a few. I mean, I don't know if people know this. I'm going to brag on my hometown. The Twin Cities is a bastion of healthcare innovation and has been for decades. Like, managed care started here. The first managed care company started here, Definity Health. We have, you know, Medtronic based here. Just a lot. The first Minute Clinic started here. And so Bright Health, based out of the Twin Cities. I've talked about Nice Healthcare, which is another primary care model that's really focused on delivering primary care in the house call setting with a virtual support. Yeah. So I would look at those locally.
Yeah, I'll throw in a vote for Kind Body, who I'm just obsessed with. They are focused on fertility specifically because, as we all know, women's health is not so easy. And so they're trying to make it easy, but also they have employer benefits. And one thing I heard them say at the health conference a couple years ago is that there's just so much stress and emotional turmoil around fertility, and women are thinking about it at later and later ages. And so for employers, there's a benefit to helping women through that, because one, you can keep your employees around longer, but two, just women have, you know, as much stress over not being able to have a child as they do, you know, when they can have one. So definitely take a look at Kind Body. Really fascinating what they're doing.
Nice. Yeah. Cool. I mean, you can't not mention Amazon in this conversation too, right? I think they're going to have 40 locations in retail locations by the end of next year too. So, not that we forget about them, but yeah, they're making ground for.
Well, if you want to, we include this in the book. But Scott Galloway, again, in one of his podcasts, probably from August, I'm going to say August or July, you can go back and find it. He goes like on a 15-minute rant about Amazon's going to eat healthcare.
Yeah,
he's very over the top about it, but a lot of the points he's making are dead on. Like he starts and ends with, they have access to capital, more capital at a lower rate than anybody in the world. So they can borrow money, more money at a cheaper rate, which means they can do whatever they want to do times 10. Like, there's just impossible to fight that if that's what you're up against. So anyway, yeah, good stuff. Well, you guys, happy 2021.
Yes, happy See holidays. You later.
Was 2021 was better than 2020, right? I mean, there's no debating that.
Yeah, marginally.
2020 is like 1929 or 1941. It's going to go down the annals. It's like one of the worst years in the history of this country, don't you think?
Yeah, I would say 2021 is almost a lost year. I mean, yeah. Right? It's like not all the way better, but not enough to be in the history books as the worst. So, hey, on to the next.
Yeah. It's like when we talk about the Spanish flu, I think people always say 2018, but it was actually it was 2 years long. But that was the year that it started, I think. I hope I got that right. Maybe 2018, 2019.
Oh,
yes. Yeah. So, all right. Well, have great holiday season, however you want to celebrate that. You too, Chase and Stephanie, thank you both for a great year.
Of course. You too.
Yeah. All right. Stephanie, you're not going to say goodbye?
Goodbye.
Your last chance. It's your last chance of the year.
Goodbye.
Yes.
Right, there you go. All right. And to all of you, thank you for joining us through our podcast for this last year. We got lots lined up for next year. It's going to be an incredible year. Lots to talk about. Hopefully we'll finally put COVID at least in the rear view as a headline dominator at some point in this coming year. But we really appreciate you joining us. If you want us to cover something in the coming year, let us know. If you got feedback for us, let us know. If you've got brands you want us to watch, let us know. You can email anything you want about this podcast at nonormal@reviveagency.com. We'd love to hear from you. Make sure you share this with all your friends, your colleagues. Give us a review on iTunes. All of that's great. Until next year, don't be satisfied with the normal. Push the no normal. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll see you next time. Bye.
3, 2, 1.